This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Greensboro and Winston-Salem had the highest rates of eviction in all of North Carolina in 2016. That statistic raised a lot of questions at the WFDD Public Radio Newsroom in the Triad. Housing became the focus of a year-long reporting series that brought together several partners, WFDD journalists, the Carolina Data Desk at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill, and journalism students from Wake Forest University. The final product is On the Margins, a one-hour documentary including three investigations into the Triad's housing problems. Mandy Locke is a key figure in the project. She's an independent journalist, former News and Observer investigative reporter, and she joins me now. Welcome back, Mandy.
Great to be with you, Frank.
I want to talk about this process and the collaboration itself, because that's a remarkable story, how this all came together and how these findings were actually churned up and turned into stories. But let's dig into one of the pieces right now. WFDD reporter and producer David Ford broke down the eviction process in this. So we're talking about an area that has the highest eviction rate in the state. People are asking why. And David Ford then breaks down the eviction process in a piece called Evictions Cost. It Won't Be Home Anymore. Tell me about the focus of that piece.
I think that what was really important for us is to show both the magnitude of the problem, but also just how strangely sterile and mechanical the process of evicting someone. I mean, I think we can all agree that the sheer notion of being displaced from your home is stunning and startling. But when you go to eviction court every day, it's very, very, very pro forma. It's a series of questions. Did they pay their rent? If not, you know, you need to be out in 10 days. And some of these cases can wrap up in less than a minute, and we're talking about someone's home.
Yeah, and eviction court is a dicey proposition. I want to play a little bit of the piece that we've talked about. This is the son of one of the other people who he talked with in this piece. This is Bobby Lucas, who went to eviction court with his mother, Wanda, and he talks about the process.
Just how many people there were, it was just horrible. There was 24 people being evicted just from that company that day.
Lucas and his mom didn't come here to win. They knew the rent was too steep for her to manage. They came with one simple request, a few extra days to pack up a house and basement filled over decades.
They said they would give us at the end of the month, but, you know, after that, they couldn't guarantee anything unless we paid a month's rent.
Yeah, it's a clip from David Ford's piece, Evictions Cost, It Won't Be Home Anymore, part of the WFDD documentary On the Margins about housing problems in the Triad. By the way, you can find a link to the documentary at our website, stateofthings.org. I'm talking with independent journalist Mandy Locke, who is part of that collaborative process. And, of course, the impact, Mandy, is something else that this project documented, right? Tell us more about that.
I think most people think about evictions as being this one moment of chaos. You know, you might have a little bit of trouble leading up. You have a broken down car, a loss of a job, a sick loved one, and then boom, you're displaced. But what we came to learn through our reporting is that the effects of eviction linger for years and years and years. And the reason is that eviction is on your record. So every single time you are seeking new housing, a potential landlord is going to see that, and they're going to see it as a red flag. And so some of the people we talked to described it as this stain, this tattoo, this mark that you can't get off of you that puts you into this subclass of renters forevermore. And when we talk about subclass, I mean, imagine the kinds of places that you might be eligible to rent if you have that mark against you, places with dilapidated homes, landlords that aren't on the up and up. And so we've created this reverberating problem that will persist in the Triad for years and years.
And we talked about the fact that we have these high rates in the Triad. And of course, there are a lot of reasons. It's complicated. You get into them in your series. But one of them, obviously, is just lack of income and affordability. I want to listen to Wanda, who is part of David Ford's story, just talk about how she got where she was.
I don't get but a little over $700 a month, and I just couldn't pay all the bills.
Tell us a little more about Wanda's story, will you, Mandy?
Wanda was, so David and I were in eviction court the day that Wanda came in, and she's this tiny woman. She's older, she's on a fixed income, and the precipitating event that leads her to being evicted was twofold. One, her sister had just died. She and her sister had shared the home and shared the rent payment. And then the management company that the owner of the apartment she rented changed hands, and the rent was going up by $50, which doesn't seem like a whole lot. But for Wanda, who gets $700 on Social Security a month, she knew that she just couldn't make it work. And so she knew she was going to be out, and she had no ability to come up with that money and wouldn't be able to come up with that money theretofore. But she came to ask for just a few more days to pack up more than 40 years and three generations of belongings from the home they rented. And it was this stunning moment where to see this little woman against this big system. And of course she did lose that day. They gave her a few extra days to pack up, but they said, if you linger much beyond that, then you'll have to pay one more month's rent, which she didn't have.
When you talk about having lived there for all of those decades and the reminiscences and the memories, we have another clip from David's piece that features Rachel Barbary, who is Wanda's sister, and she's talking about those very memories.
We have our memories of her being here, and she wanted her family like a glove fitting tight, and we tried to do that.
That's a clip from David Ford's piece, Evictions Cost, It Won't Be Home Anymore, part of the WFDD documentary On the Margins. I'm talking with Mandy Locke, who is part of that collaborative effort. And, of course, then the question is where to go, because, you know, clearly in this case, income was part of the problem. She's in a fairly low rent place to begin with, and now where do you go?
So when we left off with Wanda at the end of our reporting process, she was bunked up with another sister, and she cares for a granddaughter of hers. So there were four or five of them going to be living in a mobile home, and she knew that eventually she'd wear out her welcome there. She's on a waiting list for public housing, but that list is very, very long and sometimes can be as much as 5 to 7 years before your name is ever called off that list. So to say the things and the prospects for Wanda were bleak is an understatement. Add to that her landlord still wants the money she owes, and they put a monetary judgment on her, so that will show up anytime she's applying for any type of credit or application for anything involving money. So this eviction event is going to be with Wanda for a very long time.
As we say, this is more than just one sad story. This is a story that plays out multiple times and more times in the Triad than anywhere else in the state, at least as of 2016. Give us a sense of the scope and the magnitude, Mandy.
So we did a breakdown of the numbers. My colleague, Ryan Thornburg at UNC's journalism program, was able to show us that since 2014, half of the renters in the Triad have faced the threat of eviction. Imagine that for
50%.
A moment. Half of the renters.
Well, how does it compare to the rest of the state?
So we are not a state that has much to brag about in terms of eviction rates, but for some reason there is just an intense concentration in both Greensboro and Winston-Salem. Comparatively, both of those cities show up in the top 20 cities in America for concentrations of eviction.
Now, we know that because of this collaborative effort, this journalistic enterprise that you all undertook. Just you looked at one statistic, the WFDD newsroom did, and then decided to put this together. Tell us more about this collaboration, Mandy.
So, as you know, Frank, I've done investigative journalism in the state for a very long time and have become concerned about the big gaps in coverage that we have, both topic and territory. But more than that, I was concerned that the journalists within the newsrooms were not able to perform the kind of journalism that they wanted to, that would have that deep, lasting impact on their community. And so I was at a conference last January, in January of 2017, and met Emily McCord, the news director of WFDD, and I just sort of, we were standing in the buffet line and randomly said to her, so what are you guys doing by way of training for investigative reporting? And her mouth dropped and she said, absolutely nothing, but we would love to. And so I wanted to test a concept that we now have learned a lot about the details of the execution. But the question that we began with is, Can you infuse a little bit of extra resources into a single newsroom in a single community on a single topic and elevate the journalist and the journalism that's being performed in that newsroom for the community? And luckily, we now know after a year endeavor that the answer to that question is yes.
Let's talk more about what that infusion meant and who else was involved, because it's a lot of data reporting that's involved in this before you get to talk to the people involved, right?
That's right. That's right. So what we did, and we're going to be seeing a lot more of this in journalism, because I think the days of competitive journalism have left us. We have got to share our toys in the sandbox. We've got to come together and bring what resources we can to bear to deliver the kind of journalism that our communities deserve. So what we were able to have here is a magical collaboration that involved me coming in on behalf of, funded through a grant that the Knight Foundation provided to the Journalism School, School of Media and Communications at UNC Chapel Hill, and Ryan Thornburg, who runs a program within that grant called the Data Desk, which is interested in improving literacy for data reporting in newsrooms across our state. So we were able to use some of that money to send me in. Ryan was back at his computer doing magical things, unpacking data. He had some students involved of his, making sure they understood how to make sense of data. And then I was also teaching a small group of students at the journalism program at Wake Forest University. And so they came on board and augmented our efforts and
all right.
did some really
Mandy,
useful things there.
I'll tell you what, we're going to talk more about this fascinating project. Mandy Locke, independent journalist and former News and Observer investigative reporter, WFDD, initiated this investigation into evictions in the Triad. We'll talk more about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Cities in the Triad have some of the highest eviction rates in North Carolina. Greensboro and Winston-Salem were numbers 1 and 2 in 2016. Journalist at Winston-Salem-based public radio station WFDD investigated the region's housing struggles in a year-long collaborative reporting project. It culminated in a one-hour audio documentary, On the Margins, which brings together three aspects of the housing issues in the Triad: the ripple effect of evictions, the role of the housing authority in Winston-Salem, and the impact of redlining on one community. We have links to that documentary at our website, stateofthings.org. Eddie Garcia is one of the reporters involved in the project, a reporter, producer, and audio engineer for WFDD. His piece explored the role that government plays in Winston-Salem's eviction crisis. Eddie, welcome to you.
Hi, Frank. Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you. Still with us is Mandy Locke, independent journalist who played a key role in this project. Eddie, tell us a little bit more. We mentioned your piece focuses on the role of government, specifically the housing authority in Winston-Salem. Why did you decide to place your emphasis there?
Well, once this process got started and I knew we were working on the housing story, there were kind of so many different threads you could pull on. So spending time in eviction court kind of helped to shine a light on some areas of interest. And what I started noticing once Mandy and I were in there day after day was the Housing Authority of Winston-Salem's name coming up on the docket repeatedly. And so that struck our curiosity, and we started looking after that because it seemed to go against, I guess, my initial notion of what public housing meant. I didn't know they would be turning over units or attempting to, at least, so often.
What did you learn about the eviction rate there? Any sense of how it compared to the rest? I mean, as you say, it came up more than you expected.
Yeah, well, once we ran the data and Ryan helped us run the numbers, because see, the Housing Authority's name was coming up in these eviction proceedings under different names. So once we sort of cobbled together, it would be listed under like Winston-Salem's Housing Authority, public, like different names. Once we added them all together, we realized that they were the second highest evictor. Wow. In the city.
And this is the Housing Authority. As you say, you're expecting this is where people go. It's almost the housing of last resort, right? So if they're at the top of the list, this requires some attention, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And then once we really got down into the numbers, we realized that they were initiating eviction proceedings on a number equal to about half the total units that they own.
Wow. So 50% of those units go into eviction. Well, so one of the people you spoke with for the piece was Larry Woods, Chief Executive Officer of the Housing Authority of Winston-Salem. Tell us a bit about him.
So Larry Woods actually grew up in public housing, so he has that experience. But he views his role as more of a it's his duty to run it more like a business. He feels there isn't an exit strategy in place for tenants in public housing, and he wants it to be kind of a stopgap on the way for people getting housing in the open market. He's actually in a House of Budget Committee has said that the housing has morphed into flypaper. He says that government policies are strangling his ability to steer people towards self-sufficiency.
All right. And we've got a clip of Larry, this the CEO of the Housing Authority, talking about that very thing.
Subsidized housing is just that. It's subsidized housing. For some reason, it becomes almost as if this is a permanent fixture. I don't believe families in subsidized housing need to be a permanent fixture.
So that's a clip from Eddie Garcia's piece, Housing Authority, Major Player in Winston-Salem Evictions, part of an hour-long audio documentary, On the Margins, collaborative project featuring WFDD, the Carolina Data Desk, Wake Forest University students. And I'm talking with two of the reporters who are part of this project, Eddie Garcia and independent journalist Mandy Locke. So when you talk to him about that, I mean, this is obviously a kind of a theory that he has, right, an approach. What does he say about that? Because when you confront him with the fact that there are so many evictions, that 50% of their units are into eviction, what does he say about all that?
He says it's not a charity, very blatantly. He said this is not a charity. He calls his philosophy the self-reliance model. A quote he likes to use a lot is, give a man a fish, he'll feed himself a day. Teach him how to fish, he'll feed he and his family for life. Mandy and I interviewed him for about 2.5 hours, and he must have said that phrase at least 5 times, maybe more. So really his thinking is that we're a business, we're preparing people for what it's really like out there. And, you know, what you initially asked is, when we confront him with the numbers, how do we react? And his response is, what do you expect me to do, not collect rent?
Yeah, I wonder how many training programs the Housing Authority runs to prepare those people to fish. But I guess that's probably not the purview of the Housing Authority either. But let me talk to you about some of your reporting, which also showed that utility bills play an important role in evictions. Tell us how that's how they're connected.
So that was very surprising to me. So, you know, after you go to eviction court and after the proceedings have been put through, we would go to like the clerk's office to kind of like look at all the details, look at the what's called the shuck, and get the information, look at the breakdown, look how much past rent someone owed. And then I started seeing utilities cropping up time and time again. Sometimes they owed more utility than they did in rent. Sometimes they owed just a little bit of utility, but it was late, so eviction proceedings went forth. So I started digging into that and requesting documents from the Housing Authority and tried to learn more about how they charge for utility, because it's different than you know, most of us that rent places on our own. You sign up with Duke Energy or whoever your gas or electric provider are and have your own account. But for some of the units in the Housing Authority, the Housing Authority is actually the one reading the meters, and they're the ones issuing the bill to individuals. And that raised some questions for us. It also raises questions for individuals that are living there, because we talked to a number of people who were seeing either wild fluctuations, irregular, just not seasonal fluctuations, mind you, in their bills, and then also some changing ways of how they were even being notified of how much they owed. So we started looking into that a little deeper.
I mean, that's interesting. Inconsistencies in the rate, in the bills, right, the totals, in the way they're billed, but also the connection to eviction. Because, again, if you fail to pay your utility bill, you get a lot of warnings. And this is what everybody does, including businesses. They juggle their bills, right? So they put off the landlord for a while, then they put off the utility for a while. But if you're saying, I'm going to get thrown out for not paying the utility bill and the rent, now I've lost that flexibility that every business, top to bottom, including some billionaires who trade in real estate, have used for a long time to juggle their bills, right?
You are absolutely correct. Your rent in a Housing Authority unit could be as low as $50 a month, but maybe that month you got a $70 gas bill and couldn't afford it. That is enough to initiate an eviction proceeding on you.
You talked to somebody named Fleam Tart, too, about that. Yeah, tell us what he was telling you.
So he is someone who is very proactive as far as like wanting to know the truth, knowing what's going on in the housing authority. He's kind of a beloved figure there. Lots of like kids visit him and he gives them candy and he's friendly with the neighbors and he goes to any kind of community meetings. He's just, you know, he's a really energetic, charismatic guy. But he was feeling troubled by the bills and them being way out of proportion. So he is someone who was going to the office time and time again, getting huge printouts, and we met up with him and he was showing us all these discrepancies, and he had a lot of questions and a lot of suspicions about how he was being charged. And he's someone who is on disability, on a fixed income, and he was starting to get you know, a little bit of fear in him, I'd say.
I think I got his name wrong. He's Phelim Tart.
Phelim Tart.
Yeah, it's interesting too, and I want to take a step back and talk about this project and the fact that you shine the light of day on this and bring all of these disparate elements in the field of journalism and data collection to bear. You've got UNC and its data collecting, you know, resources. But then here's Phelim, right, who's a guy in public housing who's got all this stuff, he's collected it, who doesn't have much of a voice all by himself. If you're not doing this, all of that data he's collected stays with him, right?
That's right.
Let's talk about, and then Mandy was talking earlier about, she's still with us, Mandy Locke, about the long-term impact of this and the fact that once you get into this churn and you're through the eviction process, it's really hard to get out from underneath that. And Phelim talked to you about that as well. I want to hear a clip.
When they put that mark on you, that's like a, what do you call it, a tattoo. You can't get rid of it. You're marked. So wherever you go to try to get a place to stay, they have that on your record and you are hindered as an individual.
That's a clip from Eddie Garcia's piece, Housing Authority Major Player in Winston-Salem Evictions, part of an hour-long audio documentary, On the Margins, a collaborative project featuring the WFDD Newsroom, Carolina Data Desk, and Wake Forest University students. Two of the reporters are with me at this moment, part of the project, WFDD reporter and producer Eddie Garcia and independent journalist Mandy Locke. Well, like, you know, on the other hand, there are bills to pay. You got to pay your rent, right? I mean, because the cost of maintaining this housing doesn't go away because people can't pay their rent. So when you talk to the CEO, we talked to who runs the Housing Authority, who said, look, you know, teach a man to fish. This is not a permanent setup. Larry Woods. He was also telling you, and we do talk with people, we do give them some grace, right? Talk about that, because I understand that you found a memo that that raised some questions about the amount of flexibility tenants have when they run into trouble.
Right. So it's not only HUD policy, it's also every housing unit in a public housing community has something called an ACOP, and that's sort of like the rules and regulations for that individual property. And according to their own written rules, if someone is having trouble paying rent, if someone has a hardship, they have a right to have formal and informal grievance hearings with property managers or other officials from the housing authority. And as we were speaking with Larry Woods, he reiterated that. He said, you know, if there's a hardship, there's a problem, we will talk with you. So on one of our visits out to Piedmont Park Apartments, someone we talked to handed us this memo that had been distributed that went pretty clearly against that. It was indicating that a new policy was in place and that effective immediately with no exceptions, there will be no late rent. Basically saying, you know, we're not going to talk to you about this anymore. You're late. It goes into the system. It goes into eviction proceedings. We're done talking.
I want to play a clip from your piece.
Tenants say they don't always feel the door is open, and they have reason to feel that way. WFDD acquired a document distributed to residents of Piedmont Park last fall that says as much. It announces a new policy. No more tolerance for late rent payments. No exceptions. And there's this line. The management office will no longer set appointments to discuss unpaid rents. We showed this notice to Woods.
This is troubling for me because we do set up appointments, and we do allow families to go into payment agreements.
Woods hadn't seen this memo until we showed it to him. We asked him if property managers should have this kind of discretion.
Again, I think it was poorly written because tenants can go in and meet with their manager. Managers are accessible. They can go in and talk to them and have discussions with them.
That's a clip from Eddie Garcia's piece, Housing Authority, Major Player in Winston-Salem Evictions, part of an hour-long audio documentary, On the Margins, a collaborative project with WFDD, Carolina Data Desk, and Wake Forest University. I'm talking to Eddie Garcia here. So has there been any fallout from that yet? Because, again, he might be running afoul of HUD rules with that memo. Was there any kind of follow-up on that yet?
Yeah, and an expert agreed that they could be running afoul of the HUD rules. So pretty soon, immediately after our interview, we got in touch with their legal counsel, and we were told that new memos were being sent out to property managers and other staff to let them know that they are supposed to speak with tenants when there is a hardship or if there is a problem. And then the second thing, and maybe to me, I feel kind of the bigger piece of that was the day after our story aired, Phelan Tart texted Mandy and I a picture of him holding a document dated the day after our story aired that said, we want all residents to know that if, you know, you're having trouble with rent, you can, the door is open, you can come in and speak to us, essentially.
That's Eddie Garcia, WFDD reporter and producer. I want to introduce Bethany Chafin, another journalist involved in On the Margins and reporter and producer at WFDD. Hello, Bethany.
Hi, thanks. So glad to be here.
Tell us about the focus of your piece.
Yeah, so I zoomed in on a specific neighborhood right outside of downtown Greensboro. And this neighborhood is called Old Ashboro. It's one of the oldest in the city. And it really is the site of vital housing stock. There are about 700 residential properties here. And these properties are still affordable. The average tax value for these homes is about $50,000, so still within reach for low-income residents. And we looked at this area's struggle to both grow but also maintain this affordability that it has provided for the community of Greensboro.
Why has it struggled to grow? The whole area is booming. What's going on there?
Yeah, so we started looking into the history of this neighborhood, and specifically we were looking at some maps that are commonly called redlining maps. And what these maps do, they were drawn up by the Homeowners Loan Corporation after the banks collapsed and the Great Depression had taken root. And these maps were drawn to show an assessment of lending risk in communities. The problem is that they were drawn in many ways along racial lines. And so Old Ashboro, this neighborhood, had been drawn and colored both yellow and red, meaning that this was deemed a declining area and that it was a high-risk area to lend in. So you have a history of disinvestment in this community. You also have a you know, very layered history as well happening beyond those redlining maps, but certainly you have the legacy of less infusion of funds into this neighborhood. So perhaps it wasn't growing like some areas around it.
And, of course, that cuts into home ownership, which is all about wealth building. And, of course, we have Ta-Nehisi Coates and Ava DuVernay and others to thank for bringing all of this to our attention, the impact of this legacy discrimination. And you talked with, in terms of home ownership, you were talking with one of the homeowners in the area about these benefits and what gets lost when this kind of area has been under imposed or under this kind of restriction for so long. Let's listen.
When you are someone that has consistency in your life, when you don't have to worry about, am I going to be kicked out? That's what a home is all about. I mean, it's the literal thing of the roof over your head is a symbol of protection, safety, longevity, permanence, freedom from fear. When you know that you have a solid foundation under you, your mind is clear, good positive psychology, you can go to school, you can do better, you can show pride with amongst your peers. It is one of the foundations for positive psychology in any society, having a home.
It's Jody Martin who spoke with my guest Bethany Chafin for her piece Balancing on the Edge, Affordability and Growth in Old Ashboro. Tell us a little bit more about Jody.
Yeah, Jody, a wonderful individual. He is a lifelong Old Ashboro resident. He was born in the neighborhood, and his family bought their home on Tuscaloosa Street at a really pivotal time in the neighborhood's history. It was when Old Ashboro was transitioning to become a predominantly Black neighborhood. So as he was growing up, that's what he remembered. He remembered a predominantly Black neighborhood. And I don't think you could say it much better than Jody does as far as the psychological benefits of homeownership. He himself inherited the home in 2013 after his mother died, and he intends to remain in this neighborhood. He says a lot of his former neighbors have either passed away or moved away, and so his street looks a bit different than it did when he was growing up. But his hope is that perhaps his niece or nephew might take over the family home. And as you hinted at, you know, a home can be a family's fastest way to build equity and have something to pass on to the next generation.
I want to thank you all for being on the program. Mandy Locke, I want to ask you one more question about this collaboration. We've talked more about it, but, you know, the kind of the impact of this kind of reporting going forward. Tell us a little bit more about kind of what you learned, because as you said, you had some questions about this whole project and how to put it together. What did you learn in doing this project?
I learned that when you can give a little bit of extra resources to a newsroom that is hungry and eager and capable of doing more, then we are able to produce the kind of journalism that our audience and our communities deserve. And so I think this kind of collaboration teaches us that we really need to be joining forces more, lifting each other, and playing nicely for the benefit of our communities.
Mandy Locke, independent journalist, former investigative reporter with the News and Observer, Eddie Garcia and Bethany Chafin, both reporters and producers at public radio station WFDD in Winston-Salem, all part of the year-long collaborative project On the Margins, and you can find links to our website, stateofthings.org. Mandy, Eddie, and Bethany, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, who was the North Carolina woman known as Martin Luther King Jr.'s second wife? We'll talk about Dorothy Cotton, who trained thousands of people across the South to be civil rights leaders. More about her on the State of Things in just a moment. Stay with us.